Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. All right, welcome to the Mornings with Joel CRE Podcast. We are excited to have you back another week. We appreciate you being with us and listening to these fine educational podcasts that we have on a weekly basis. Today, we have a special guest that we brought in, a player in the commercial multifamily real estate space who's doing some big things, my man Gino. Gino, what's happening, buddy?
Joel, thanks. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Hey, I got to tell you, man, I grew up in New York City, and I think you were up north too, if I remember correctly, but I look at that billboard behind you, and it reminds me of all the flyers that they used to put on construction sites.
You like that, huh? Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to promote myself here, but you know, New York City is near and dear. I mean, I know you were there. I was there. I moved out 6 years ago, so I'm a New Yorker. Okay. Yeah, yeah, I moved down to Florida 6 years ago, so it'll always have a special place in my heart, Joel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, good stuff, good stuff. So, Gino, for our audience, who are you? I mean, obviously, you know, where I only try to invite special people to the show. And I feel you're one of those special people. So tell us a little bit about your, you know, who you are, and then we'll dive into your background and whatnot. But what are you doing today? And I see something about a show behind you and all that stuff. So what are you doing, buddy?
You know, for me to start out with, I think the most important thing in my life is I'm a father of six kids. I've got a 23-year-old all the way down to eight. Man of faith. We homeschool the kids. My oldest daughter is a missionary. So I think that has been a really large component of my life. And as I've gotten older, I've grown deeper in my faith. I've seen what God's been able to do in my life and how transformative he's been able to have touch every part of my life. And to me, that's the most important thing in my life, bar none, is God, then my relationship with my wife, then my children. And if I had to look back at it 20 years ago, I was just the pizza guy 20 years ago. I had a restaurant in New York. I got married and started having kids with the wife. And I loved living in New York. I love the small business. I love the hustle every week. You work, you get paid, but then you got to do it again. And I did that for a long time until 2007, when the Great Recession comes, my father passes away. And I was a little guy going to the restaurant every day. I thought every kid went to work with their pops at the restaurant. And it was just part of my being, my soul. I grew up in that atmosphere. I loved working. Talk about hustling and grinding. You're never off the restaurant. You're working on the holidays. You're working on the weekends. But it's a great business because you learn the hard work ethic and you learn how to serve others. And when OA came, I stopped blaming everything. I stopped blaming everybody. I was in that victim mentality of like, man, it's Obama's fault. It's Bush's fault. It's the economy. And I said, you know what? That's not true, because there's people making millions of dollars, and Gino Barbaro is not one of them. And I had to figure it out the hard way. Once I started taking responsibility and I said, well, how are these other people making money? I was led to real estate. I had done a couple of bad deals prior to 08, but then I said, let me learn this multifamily thing. People need a place to live. I like serving others, and I can start out by buying a fourplex or a fiveplex while I'm still working at the restaurant. And that's what I did. I joined a couple of mentorship groups. I was lucky that God put Jake in front of me in 2009. He's the drug rep. He was taking pharmaceutical, you know, doctors, getting food from our restaurant and bringing orders to their offices. Oh, wow. I got to meet him through that. And he was a real hustler, young guy. He didn't know anything about real estate. He moved to Knoxville in 2011. We started partnering up. Took us 18 months to find that first deal. And we bought that first deal in 2013. I guess the rest is history. That's the short synopsis of it. But for anybody out there with multifamily, it's not a pie in the sky. If a pizza guy and a drug rep can figure it out, I think anybody can figure out the space.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's that's quite a story there, you know, from that standpoint. So you said he was actually picking up food, delivering it to these doctors, I guess, trying to increase his drug sales business. And to be clear, we're not talking about crack cocaine on the street corner, right?
Well, I mean, there's a fine line. With the pharmaceutical industry, it's legal crack cocaine. If you look at it that way. Yeah, but the Sunshine Act is coming, Joel. And this is the important thing. Jake was a W-2 worker. And I look at my small business as being a W-2 worker. We both wanted to escape it and create wealth. And we both saw real estate as that path. So interestingly enough, we were both in the same parts of our journey saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to see if I can find some type of financial freedom or autonomy for my life. And that's how we both led to multifamily.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's an incredible background. You know, obviously, if you've got, what'd you say, six kids or eight kids?
No, I wish I had eight. I only have six.
You only got six. Okay, all right. You got to figure out a way to support that big family. So that's a big thing. Yes. And obviously you got a passion for Italian food. Is that your background, or you got some roots back in the old country?
Dude, I mean, the linguine vongole I make, my father actually created the focaccia sandwich. I can go on and on about food. This could be a food show right now. I wrote a cookbook on food.
Really?
Well, hey, listen, family, food, faith, those are the three F's in our family. And I think the whole idea with food, you get around the dinner table. For us, it's such an important component as Italians. We make these long, drawn out meals, but it really is to get your kids around the table, to have that special time and to have that conversation. So what happened in your day? What are you excited about? Arguing, discussing. Mm-hmm. I think that's what food allows you to do. And any kind of food. Listen, I love sushi. I'm a big sushi guy. I won't make it at home, but I'll go out and eat it. I love Thai food. But hey, Italian food's got a little special something in my heart, my friend.
Special something in your heart. Yeah, man. I understand. I certainly understand. I've been all over Italy, so I can certainly appreciate what you're saying.
Yes.
Know? And even the diversity from one part to another. I mean, it's a big deal. So
yes,
good stuff. And I was thinking about while you were talking, Grimaldi's. Is Grimaldi's down there in Times Square? You know, the Italian restaurant. I'm pronouncing it wrong, but anyway, we'll talk about that another time.
So let's talk about another restaurant, Rao's. Did you see that Rao's just sold for $2.2 billion? Talk about building a brand, a little Italian crappy restaurant in Harlem, 30-something seats. They built an iconic brand. And it's really interesting when you look at that space as opposed to people in real estate, you're a syndicator. It's all about building the brand and building awareness. They sell pizza sauce. They sell jars of tomatoes. They sell pasta. And they sold the Campbell's for $2.2 billion. Good for them.
Wow. Yeah. That's an incredible story. My goodness. One way to go. How about that?
Yes.
So, you know, you bring up a point, though. How important do you think it is to build a brand? I mean, that's a good point. I think that's a good segue to what we're talking about today as well.
You know, unfortunately, brand is probably your biggest ROI. I think it's very hard nowadays to build a brand, because I think the first thing you need to do when you want to build a brand, I think, is what's the purpose of the brand? What is your purpose? Mm-hmm. And I think most of us just are thinking about products and raising capital. But what does Joel stand for? What does Gino stand for? What does Jake and Gino stand for? And I think getting that brand out and that brand awareness, it's so important nowadays, because we're so inundated with so many different messages. And if you're trying to raise capital for a deal, wouldn't it be nice to go on your Instagram page and just show people what you're doing? And show them the difficulties of running a multifamily property, the difficulties of the day-to-day and the struggles, but then also the success stories of what you're doing and how you're actually out there. I mean, I think when you create a brand, you really want that catchphrase, that slogan. And for us, Jake and Gino, what I think our iconic thought process, what we want to really share with people, is we create multifamily entrepreneurs. So when you look at the Jake and Gino Education, that's what we're looking to do. And I think if everybody can chunk their business down, if Google can do it and Apple can do it and all these other big companies can rip it down into one or two sentences and really talk about what their purpose is and what their vision is, I think everybody listening to this, if you're in the real estate space, if you're a real estate broker, you need to start differentiating yourself from other brokers, because hey, why are you charging 5%? Show your value. I think brand has to show what values they represent, what values they adhere to, what their mission statement is. I think that is all encapsulates what a brand should represent and what you want your brand to emulate.
Yeah. So it really differentiates you from the crowd is what you're telling us.
Absolutely. And you know, when you're online and you're looking at two different deals and there's two sponsors out there and the deals look pretty similar, you're looking at 15 IRR or 13.8 IRR, but that person likes Joel a lot better. They really resonate with Joel, and Joel's given them a lot of value, and Joel's been out there and they see Joel, and they see Joel as the credibility and the authority figure. Although Gino's deal may be better, they're probably going to go with Joel because they've connected. We always forget about that emotional connection. And I think that's what a brand allows us to do. I'm not a big fan of Chick-fil-A. I don't like their food per se. But when I think of Chick-fil-A, I think of homeschool kids working there for 10 bucks an hour, giving you amazing service, the efficiency, my pleasure. I think of all of those things when I think of the Chick-fil-A brand. It makes me want to go into the place, even though I don't like the food. That's what I think a brand allows somebody to do. You have that competitive advantage over other people. And I think getting out there and making yourself more public and more aware will allow you to do more business.
Yeah. Very good point. I think you encapsulated that quite well. And it's amazing, because even if you don't like the business, they're really the only place that sells a chicken sandwich where the lines are always around the corner, right?
Yes.
I mean, always.
I know.
No matter where you go. My son is after me now. He's like, Dad, why don't we buy one of these? I mean, you know, so I'm like, yeah, maybe we'll get to that.
Joel, so, little segue, please don't get into the restaurant business. Don't get it unless it's a passion of yours and you want to suffer for the next 3 years. Just stay away from the restaurant business unless you have other people running it for you.
Right, but
if you're getting into the day to day, stay away, my friend.
Yeah. No, I've known enough people that have gotten into the restaurant business and it ain't pleasurable. So
it
could definitely be very difficult. So good stuff. So you mentioned about being in multifamily and you know, that's one reason why I certainly wanted to have you on. I thought that background was good because it kind of builds the foundation, you know, because you look at people where they are today and you often say, okay, well, that's them, you know, or they were able to do this because they had this friend and they had that family and they had millions behind them and all this kind of thing. But oftentimes that's not true. I mean, you've got people like yourself that were just simple, hardworking Americans, if you will. And, you know, able to transition into the multifamily business. And you mentioned about your first deal. Why don't you kind of tell us a little bit about that? How did that all come together?
It's interesting that you say that, Joel. I think the important thing is that people need to understand where they're starting from, where they're coming from. I mean, Instagram is great, but when you look on there and people have 3,000 units and 6,000 units, but what's the ownership of that? Are they just limited partners? Are they general partners? Are they doing it? So I think everyone has to separate themselves from what's going on social media and look at what they're trying to accomplish. You had said eloquently before, 6 kids. There's a lot of weddings going on. There's a lot of college going on. Yeah. I've got to retire. And I was hearing that my entire life. And all I wanted to do, Joel, was to make a couple $1,000 a month in passive cash flow from real estate. That's all. That was my goal was initially. And Jake and I said, if we get 100 units, we are free, my friend. That's the pinnacle for us. Yeah. And it took us 18 months to find that first deal because we didn't know how to talk to brokers. Jake was a salesperson, but you can't go talk to a broker and posture up on a broker. They're the gatekeepers. They're the ones who you have to sell yourself to. So doing that over and over incorrectly, it took us 18 months.
They know you're faking it.
Yes, exactly. And we had no credibility. We didn't know how to speak to them. We didn't have a buy rate criteria. When you go in and you're saying, I want deals. Well, what kind of deals? What kind of median income? What market? How many units? How much capital do you have? Are you buying it yourself? You have partners, all these things. We didn't really have an idea. And it took us a little while to understand that. That's why it took us 18 months. And when we did buy that first deal, it was a 25 unit property. I had me, my brother, and Jake. There was 3 of us. Mm-hmm. And I think we did things a little differently than what most people end up doing. We started buying deals internally ourselves. We started funding deals ourselves because we just wanted to stay small and start living off the cash flow. And that's, you know, back then, back in 2011, 12, 13, you probably remember, it was hard raising capital back then. It was no like sentiment out there. There was no Jobs Act yet. There was no, the GDP was 1%. We bought our first deal. I remember our one beds on that first deal were like rents were like $300, $300 to $325 for one bedrooms. So, hey, you're buying them at $25 to $30 a door. It's the 1% rule. I mean, now obviously they've escalated. Those one bedrooms are $1,100. But that first deal had creative financing. We had weekly renters. We had like a 6-unit efficiency motel on it. We had little cottages, duplexes. Wow. To me, it was a dream because I'm like, I'm in the multifamily space. I can see value. And I always understood how to create value on a property because there's operational efficiencies. The rents were too low. The expenses were too high. And there were so much more other places to get, you know, value. They had garages on the property that were full of junk. Let's clear them out. Let's start creating storage spaces on there. The 6-unit little motel. Let's really make it a nice little studio efficiency place where people can actually go there and rent monthly if they want to, but do yearly. We had those monthly renters. They were weekly renters. Okay. We had to transition from weekly to yearly. So I think when you're looking at multifamily, the biggest mistake that at least we made and a lot of our students, they don't look at it as a business. They just look at it as, hey, I'm buying this little asset and this investment. But every deal you buy should be looked at as a little cash machine and as a little business. And as you start scaling up, you're starting to own multiple businesses around. Now, what you do with those businesses is you can fix them up, create value, and flip them, right? That's how you get that equity out and how you create value in multifamily, the exit. For us, we still have that very first deal. We bought it for $600,000. It was a 25-unit deal. Today, it's probably worth $2.5 million. We have like maybe $400,000 of debt on it. It prints about $7,000 to $8,000 a month in cash flow every month. So for everybody out there, two of my children have gone through college already. They've gotten paid from that one little deal. That was our strategy, to buy and to hold and to sit tight. You know, we always say buy right and sit tight. That's our strategy, right? Because we didn't want to really expand, do one or two really good deals a year. And after five deals, you're like, wow, I got 10 deals here. It's amazing what can happen if you think a few years out, because we always overestimate what we can do in 1 year, but we vastly underestimate what we can do in 5 years. And for Jake and myself, it was like, let's buy a good deal. Let's fix it up. Let's refinance it, pull the money out, and let's go into the next deal. And that served us really well early on.
Wow. That's a very, very simple model. So that's really good. What other early mistakes would you say you made that would be of value to our listeners? You mentioned about not viewing it as a business. Was there anything else that really jumps out at you as being an error in that standpoint?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we really struggled with early on, and I think most beginning investors, I didn't have a community. There was no Jake and Gino back then. I would have loved to be part of a community where I could say, hey, does anybody have an appraiser? Does anybody have a contractor? Do you have any, you know, documents on due diligence? Because the hardest thing for any beginning investors is due diligence. It's really hard. And I was lucky on that third deal. I had hired another coach. On our third deal, it was 136 units. You know, we bought a 25 unit. Then 3 months later, we bought a 36 unit. Then 6 months later, we bought 136 units. On that third deal, my coach, my mentor, he saved us, because all the due diligence, all the different leases we had to look at, the rent rolls, we weren't really, when you're dealing with mom and pops, they don't really have that. But when you're getting up in these bigger assets, it's like, oh gosh, what's the due diligence? And that due diligence, you know, trust but verify. I'm not even sure who said it. It might have been Ronald Reagan. I don't know, but that is so important. You want to be able to trust the other side, but you need to verify what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And for us, we were fortunate. The mistakes on the first and second deals, we didn't have enough capital raised, or we didn't have a balance sheet partner. On that third deal, all of a sudden we had proved the model, and that's how we were able to scale into that larger one. Because I'm like, our partner, Mike, who is still partnering with us to this day, he saw the value. He's like, oh, I see what you guys are doing. It's just a numbers game. It's income over expenses. So for those early investors out there, if you're looking to get in the multifamily, there's two things that you need to do. You need to be sourcing deals. And you need to be sourcing capital or investors. And you need to, don't tell me there's no deals out there, because there's always something to do. You can start building a brand like Joel here, who's got a great podcast and great show, or you can start talking to investors, family offices, you know, other people out there looking to get, who have capital, looking to invest in something else. So those two things I think you all should be doing right now.
Yeah. And actually, I kind of wanted to go back to two things that you mentioned. You talk about units. Let's dive into that for a minute. Most people don't really understand the work that goes into a unit, a development rather, that's above 100 units, and a group that's below 100 units. Mm-hmm. For education of our audience, what's really the difference in how you put together a deal, you know, with those two different sizes?
Well, it depends upon the capital you have. We've only done three syndications. We've gone full cycle on two. We're looking at selling our third one. When you're investing in the smaller deals, it probably behooves you to do a joint venture where you know, let's say you're doing a 10 or 20 unit deal and it's your first deal. It may not make economic sense, because we all want to scale up to the bigger properties because there's economies of scale, but you need to start. I mean, get going and then get good. We all want to get good. And then we want to get going. How do you get good if you don't get going? It's a real difficult concept. Yeah. It really is. So for us, I just knew that I couldn't do 100 units on my first deal. A lot of our students do. I couldn't get over that barrier in my mind. And I think behaviors are belief driven. If I believe that I can't do 100 units, no matter what I'm doing, I will not be able to do it. So for the smaller properties, it may behoove you to find a couple of partners and joint venture. Take that down. You'll own more equity in the deal, but there'll be more challenges because property management may be a little bit more difficult to manage a smaller property. Now, we managed our own properties, so that was part of the value add that we had. Right. The larger deals, you know, we just did 105 units right now. We closed it 2 weeks ago. It was a $10.5 million deal. We had to raise about $3 million. We were able to fund that ourselves. Me, Jake, and my partner, Mike, and our employees are actually investing in our deals now also. But that deal is great because it has economies of scale. You can get professional property management in there. But you also have to, you know, get larger sums of capital. You probably would have to syndicate a deal like that if you don't have the money. Don't let that stop you. Don't let that scare you, because all of a sudden you have to bring on investors, because we've done that. And it's just something that we're more focused on, a metric called PPU. It's called profit per unit. That's why we like to own our own deals, because the deals that we own ourselves without investors are obviously more profitable. Right. Now, if you can't start there, it's okay. Just start. Syndication is a great model. Start creating some acquisition fees. Start getting some deals to go full cycle. So you start creating equity for yourself. You start pulling that equity out and you can start repurposing into your own deals. And for me, the smaller deals in 2022, we did four deals and there were sub 30 units. One of them was a 40 unit. And the other one was a 16 unit, a 12 unit. We did a 25 unit. What we ended up doing was we had larger properties. We would just assume them and group them up with the larger properties. So we got economies of scale that way. So for us, those smaller deals, there were a lot more of them because all the private equity guys were going in there, bidding up these larger assets. So it was a lot harder to compete at those price points. Now, as we're seeing the market slow down and there's less offers out there, those price points on those bigger assets are really coming down. I think the benefits of these bigger deals, obviously, like I said, you can get third-party property management. There are economies of scale. And when you're out to sell them on the back end, there's more demand, or you have much more sophisticated investors, sure, institutions that are willing to pay more than someone trying to sell a 30-unit property as opposed to someone selling a 200-unit property.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I wanted to go down the road with that discussion, because most people, you know, like you said, they want to start at the 150-unit, but they really don't understand what's involved with that. And if you're jumping into 200, 300 unit properties, you're going to be dealing with the big boys on Wall Street that you're going to be competing with in the institution. Yes. Right.
Do you mind if I share a quick story on that?
No, please.
It's exactly with this. On our third deal, I remember it was 136 units. It wasn't a lot of money back then, but to me, it was everything I had. It was a $4 million deal. The right. price points back then were different, but this property was 80% occupied. And there was 40 something vacants. Don't know why. It just was. Five of the units they were using as storage sheds. They had gutted them. So if that was my first property, we had no concept of how to turn a unit. You have to turn those units rather quickly. Yeah. So we had already had experience with the 60 units that we owned. We already had experience with resident managers. We already had experience with maintenance techs. So this property, actually, we turned these units over a lot quicker than if we had bought that on our very first property. So don't think you have to get the big one on the first one. Get some experience first. Try to prove the model. And if you're saying to yourself, well, I don't want to go into the smaller deals. Maybe you find a sponsor out there who's crushing it, but needs some capital to be raised in a deal, or you want to join his or her team. Do that and leverage their experience and maybe, or even become a limited partner in a deal and see how the business works. You may not, you know, you're going to be obviously passive, but you can walk through the eyes of that sponsor and see what he or she looks like. Feel the business from that way. Because once you have money or skin in the game, I think everything changes because now you're invested in that deal. Now you're starting to pay attention. That's, I guess, one of the lower barriers of entrance of ways to get into deals is by being an LP or by joining somebody else's team.
Right. Exactly. Now, I'm going to go into a couple of other things here just so that we always define our terms, and I always do that for our audience for them. And I'll let you do it. Explain what the difference is between an LP and a GP. I don't even think you use those terms, GP and LP, but you know what I mean. So
yeah, well, I mean, a limited partner's risk is limited to only that deal. They're truly passive. You get on the deal, they're called equity investors, equity right. partners. The general partner, the GP, is the one who's actually putting the deal together, running day-to-day management. It's one of those things where when we started out, it was not as common. Now, over the last 5 or 6 years, like I said, with the Jobs Act and with the ability to raise tons of capital, you have these groups out there that are putting together these syndications. It's just really basically getting all of these different people, pooling their funds together and creating this syndication. And the general partners are the ones running the deal. They're the ones who are signing on the debt. Right, they're the ones who are taking the risk. If the deal goes bad, they've got their butt, in trouble if something happens. But at the same time, they have material benefits. They're not putting as much capital into the deal, and they're owning part of that deal. They're getting fees, so they're able to get what we call acquisition fees, possibly asset management fees, construction fees to manage the deal, whatever that looks like. And they're using the limited partners out there. Capital to fund the deal. And they could also put money. I would recommend every general partner put money on the limited partner side just to say, hey, I have faith in this deal and I want to invest and I want to earn some money passively. I think for limited partners out there, if you're a doctor, you're an attorney, you're a high income earner, and you don't have the time to do business and real estate full time, become a limited partner. That process, start building it up, and you can buy a deal in Dallas. You can have a deal in Tennessee. You can have a deal in Florida. You can start as it's almost think of the mutual fund strategy where you're having multiple different investments in different areas. You're spreading your risk out, and you can choose what sponsor you want to work with, what market you want to work with. I think it's a great way to actually get into real estate as a high income earner. And as you quote unquote, if you want to transition to the business full time, you already have some type of portfolio. You've already made those contacts. You already understand how the business goes. The next step is to choose a market and start focusing on that market.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree 200%. You know, that's an excellent way for high net worths to do that, you know, as opposed to trying to get out there and say, well, I'm going to do a flip on the weekend of a single family home.
No.
You would think it the same way. Well, don't do it. Right. Yes. But yeah, because that will drive you absolutely nuts, and you won't do anything in your medical practice if you're a doctor. So
I would say find the Joels of the world. Go out and find a Joel Miller of the world who's doing the business and create the relationship and see if Joel Miller's goals and investment strategy align with yours. That's the important thing. I mean, if you do align and you like Joel, Joel's been in the business for a long time. He's got a lot of credibility. You check him out as a sponsor. That's how I would start. I would start that way, because then all of a sudden you meet Joel, you have those conversations. Joel knows other people in the industry. Joel's going to introduce you to other people in the industry. And all of a sudden you get an idea and a concept of how it works. And you start going to other events and all the networking functions. And then all of a sudden you start meeting people and you start building your book. And you can also say to yourself, I love this business. I'm going to continue. Or man, I could never do what Joel does. I'm just going to give Joel my money, let Joel make money for me. And I'm going to continue to be a good doctor. That's the benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One other thing you mentioned, and I, this is defining the terms again, for the sake of the audience, you mentioned full cycle, in a deal. So for the sake of those listening, what exactly do you mean when you take a deal full cycle from inception to what we would call full cycle? If you could explain that for our audience.
I'm going to give the analogy of what we call a conveyor belt. If you think of a conveyor belt and, imaginary in front of you, you start buying deals, you put deals on this imaginary conveyor belt. Jake and I, in our first deal was a 25 unit. 3 months later on the conveyor belt, we've got a 36 unit. A year later, we have 136 units. So by year two and year three, these assets are starting to matriculate on this conveyor belt. When you go full cycle, you're either selling the asset or you're the refinancing the asset. You've gone full cycle. I mean, full cycle typically is more of a sale than a refinance, but I think of full cycle as refining because you're really pulling
it. Could be a refi.
Yeah. And for me, one of our coaches, I love his saying is, you don't make money when you buy real estate. You do in for instance with cash flow, but you really make money when you go full cycle. That's when the equity that you pull out on that full cycle is what you're looking for. Now, a wise investor, Jake and myself, we didn't take that money and go out and party. We reinvested that money into the deal, into the next deal. We want to get as many assets on that conveyor belt to continue to matriculate, because equity ultimately ends up becoming cash flow. You can take that $1 million of equity, go out and buy a deal, because now it's your equity, and that equity can create cash flow for you. That's why you're looking to do these full cycle deals. And that's why it's great. Get started. Start putting the assets on these conveyor belts, because in the next 2 or 3 years, they'll start matriculating. You'll be able to go full cycle in the deal, pull that capital out, and invest in the next deal. And Joel, when people ask me, should I quit my job and go full time? It's a difficult question to answer, because I waited 5 years until I left the restaurant. I was working both because I didn't want the real estate business to support my lifestyle. I want to take the earnings from the real estate and buy more deals with it. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was a personal decision. When I finally got to the point of I'm making enough cash flow, the restaurant business is getting in the way of me continuing to grow the real estate, that's when I decided to leave. Remember, 6 kids, New York, expensive. So I had a little bit longer of a runway. Yeah. But if I had quit after my first or second deal and gone into real estate full time, those refinances, I would have had to live off of them. I would have been able to invest them into the next deal. That's why it may be challenging for the first couple of years when you're starting the business. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to put in 60 hours a week instead of 40. You can find the time if you want. But if you do that for a couple of years and you give yourself enough runway, those all of a sudden, cash flow gets you out of your job. Equity keeps you out of your job. I've learned that. And once you start getting those big equity clips, you start being able to reinvest in the next deal. That's how you start building your portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. Let's take a quick minute break for our announcement from our sponsor.
It's very confusing out there. Lots of masks, changing rules. But since you still need a go-to mask, get the mask everyone is talking about, the M-Pact Air 99. We asked real people to take off their masks and try the M-Pact Air 99.
Breathable, light, but protective.
It feels very comfortable wearing it, and also it looks cooler.
Wow,
me, you're perfectly clear.
Yes, it's as if we're not wearing a mask.
It's almost surprising how much air you can get in.
Our reusable masks are engineered with 6 layers of nanoscreen technology that blocks over 99% of viruses and bacteria while allowing you to breathe freely and speak clearly.
I took an inhale. I haven't been able to do that all day.
My glasses are not fogging up.
I could wear this all day.
Masks will still be required in many stores, offices, restaurants, indoor sporting events, and while traveling.
I love it.
All right, fantastic. So, yeah, I completely agree with everything that you're saying from there. I want to, you know, mention one other thing also. You have, first of all, it took a lot of courage to have 6 kids and say, I'm going to do this full time, right? So that's a point to bring out, because a lot of people say, well, I got a wife, I got kids, I got a house, I got this, I got that. I can never do that. But you can do it, and you have to have the mindset in order to get in there and look at examples of other people that have gone before you and have successfully done it. So certainly want to give you kudos on that. You know, where did you think you found the courage to do that? Was it just a desire of, you know, the ending that grind at the restaurant? I think that's what you had mentioned earlier, if I remember correctly.
I think there's a couple examples I can point to. I think the first one that popped up in my mind as soon as you started talking was, I married an incredible woman. I think my wife, I think she saved my soul. She's just an incredible person to be able to have 6 children, to be able to homeschool, to be able to sacrifice her life to stay home. Those days are long and lonely in New York in the wintertime when you're home by yourself and you're with your kids. And she sacrificed. So for me, as I'm getting on into the restaurant, I'm grumpy. I don't like what I'm doing. I'm coming home. I'm not the person that I want to be. And that was really emotional for me. I'm like, I'm not living up to my end of the bargain. She's sacrificing. And I don't really like what I'm doing. I'm not being a good role model for my kids and my family. And I had that conversation with her. I said, you know, what do you think if I start looking into real estate? And I'm not going to do this part time. I'm going to give it my best effort because I'm expending a lot of money. I'm investing in all these multifamily educations. I'm investing in these deals. You have my word. You have my promise. I'm going to give it my all. I'm not going to make this a part time endeavor. I'm going to work during lunch. I'm going to work at 11 o'clock at night. I'm going to work before I get up, before the kids get up. So I had to put that effort in. But I had a great partner. She was amazing. She was very supportive of what I did. And she saw the struggle that I was going through. And for me, it was always really for the family. It wasn't for about making money. I really wanted the autonomy piece. I wanted to be able to say, hey, I love what I'm doing. I want to show my kids how amazing business can be. I don't have to come home mad and grumpy and dissatisfied all the time and not have a future. That's what really locked me in. And I said, I want to do this. And she supported me. And even the move down to Florida, I had to have faith to be able to leave an Italian family and an Irish family up in New York and to say goodbye to everybody. She knew that I needed a change. She knew that I needed to separate and have some boundaries from the family. And she said, whatever you need to do. And Joel, I think it's important. If it doesn't work out, what was the worst thing for me? I could always go back to the restaurant. I can always move back up to New York. I didn't want to live that what if life. If I left the restaurant and I went to real estate and I crashed and burned, I could always go back to a restaurant. I could always find another job. Don't let that hold you back. Don't have the excuse. But I think the communication piece was so important between me and my wife. And then the last thing is, I actually became a certified life coach back in 2014. That really helped me out as far as personal development. I didn't want a life coach. I just needed the personal development for myself. I had all these questions about fear and about anger and about not taking action and about what I wanted my life to look like and all these limiting beliefs. And once you start working on yourself and you have your spouse with you, things become a lot clearer. Fear is never going to go away. Anger is never going to go away. I don't want to suppress it. I want to be able to identify and say, okay, I'm still afraid of doing deals, putting, you know, $1.5 million of your own money into a deal. That fear never goes away. It's a lot less. I can control it. I can see I have a plan for it, but to understand why I'm doing it and to understand that it won't go away and how to deal with it, that was really, really important in my life.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole lot to build on, you know, but you mentioned one thing about not having any regrets later. You know, death could be a great motivator. You know, from the standpoint of, you don't want to be like, I could have, would have, should have,
yep.
You know, you got to get out there and get it done. And I did want to mention just one thing about taking a deal full cycle, because yes, it can absolutely be a refi, you know, from the standpoint of, let's say if you acquire an asset, you know, you value add it, bring it around, stabilize it. And then at that point, flip it into agency financing or potentially sell it. But you could certainly do that. And even if you flip it to agency financing, that's considered the end of that full cycle, if you will. And then you can use that capital, which ironically enough, our guest next week is one of the nation's greatest 1031 exchange guys. He's going to be talking about that. So
yes, great topic.
And an old friend of mine from many years back about that. So that's a very, very important thing to bring out. But being able to take a deal full cycle is important because that gives you credibility in the marketplace to investors as well, for them to want to come in as well. You could say, look, we started here, we ended here, and here's the returns, or either here's the cash flow. And that's how we were able to do it. So
yeah,
very, very good example. Let's talk about one thing real quick that is of everybody's interest, and that's always capital. You know, how do you get the capital to get going? And you know, you mentioned about being in the pizza business or the restaurant business. You know, you always have that next guy that has to come in the store and buy a pizza to keep the wheels turning, right? So that could be difficult. So how did you aggregate that? Or even if it's not your experience personally, how do you see people getting that capital so that they can get going on a deal?
It was, I remember the date. It was October of 2013. And I'm sitting at the restaurant and in the front, got pizza stains, I'm tired. My partner, Mike, walks in at the time. I sort of knew him, but I didn't. He was a hedge fund guy. He was trading in commodities. He's actually the CEO of Louis Dreyfus right now, really intelligent guy. And he starts talking to me about China and commodities and gold.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started talking right back to him. And I'm sure that he's like, what is this pizza guy? What does he know about this stuff? And then I said, hey, Mike, we're investing in real estate. I know you're buying single family homes up here for $2 million. You're getting 10 grand a month in revenue. I've got an asset here for 850 grand. It's making 11,000 in rents. So look at the numbers. It's 130. So anybody so he said, okay, let me see the deal. So from that one conversation, I started talking about what I did. And I know maybe a couple of years back, I wouldn't have been prepared. Was it luck? I think it was a lot of luck. I think God put Mike there for a reason, but I was prepared for that conversation. Always talking about the business, always getting out there. On that first deal, Mike lent us $500,000 to the business. We paid him an interest rate, but he lent money to the business. So we were able to get more equity for that deal. And I will be eternally grateful for Mike to be able to do that and to be able to leverage his balance sheet. Now, he saw value for value. He saw that Jake was down there managing properties, doing the deals. He knew that I had some experience as well. So we provided a tremendous amount of value for him because Mike is trading commodities all day. He can't do multifamily, but he sees the vehicle of multifamily. He sees the tax benefits. He sees the cash flow, the appreciation, the ability to go down to the Southeast early on when all the growth is pointing down that way. So I think for you to be able to get the capital, you have to have the mindset. You have to be able to provide value to investors. I think learn the strategies. Creative financing is we did a deal in January. We got $500,000 seller finance note. We had a deal under contract in March that fell through because of due diligence. Ironically enough, we had $1 million seller finance note on that. There's a lot of deals right now that are going to qualify for seller financing. And I think the capital aspect as well, the syndication, learn the syndication model, learn how to raise capital, join a group if you don't know how to raise capital, but you need to learn how to speak the language. If I had gone to Mike and I sounded like an idiot, Mike wouldn't even have had the next conversation. But the fact that I was able to speak intelligently about macroeconomics and about the business model of multifamily, and I didn't overwhelm him because it's one of those things where we get so excited and talk IRR, just talk about the opportunity. I mean, talk about it's a basic human need. Talk about that it ain't going nowhere. I mean, like, we need it. You can't buy it on the internet. And that's, you know, there's not enough supply of it. And guess what? Millennials, they're tending to rent a little bit more. The whole thing is there. So I think there's so many ways to approach it. But the capital is learn the strategies, learn the techniques that are out there, but also learn how to raise money for your deals, because that's going to really help you to scale up and to get into more deals and start building the business of, you know, syndication, of having investors on your platform and in being able to raise money from them.
Yeah. Very good point. You know, and the good deals get the capital. So if you can identify good deals, you will be able to get the capital to get things done. Let's talk a little bit about, because I want to also talk about what you're doing today with Jake and Gino as regards your efforts. But what opportunities are you seeing in the marketplace? We know that interest rates are rising. That's been an issue. Why do you feel that situation creates opportunities in the marketplace, buying opportunities?
I think it's a market cycle, but it's also the interest rate cycle. We have such poor memories of history. And we're always like, this has never happened before. It has happened.
Yeah, it has.
Rates, that's what I'm saying. Interest rates, this is like average for interest rates. Yeah. There's a market cycle. You go into a recession. Well, first of all, let's go. Everything's you know, popping and going. Everyone's going great. The economy's going really well. They have low interest rates. We have private equity people coming in because cost of capital is so cheap. They're pushing up asset prices. There's a lot of demand. There's not as much supply. That starts to break. All the things start to slow down. And the way the Fed slows things down is they raise interest rates. As interest rates go up, the cost of capital gets more expensive. Deals have to actually start stabilizing their prices. Actually, prices have to drop. They haven't yet, but they will. And things start to slow down. The economy starts to slow down. At a certain point, they need to keep this inflation under control by raising interest rates, right? Because that's what happened. Because when you have a lot of demand, a lot of things going on, that's why the inflation was not transitory 2 years ago. Anyone in the business world knew that that was a bunch of nonsense. So they raised interest rates too quickly, and it took them too long to do it. So they wanted to shock the system. They want to break the system, slow things down. Now, as they slow things down, all of a sudden you're in a recession. They have one magic bullet. Let's drop interest rates so we can drop interest rates and we can spur the economy
back up again.
Yeah, I don't know how long that's going to be or if when that's going to happen, but people are saying, well, we don't know when rates are going to drop. First of all, the debt is astronomical. We have problems with our debt. Third world countries have even bigger problems. We have a debt problem in this world. So you can't sustain high rates forever. So I think once you start seeing rates drop, I just think right now we have a lot of maturities coming due. There's a lot of bridge debt that people bought. And I think that's going to be a big opportunity. If banks don't want to work with Joel and Gino, who bought a deal at a stupid price, thinking they're going to refi out at 3.5% or 4%, where rates are now 8%, 9%, well, are they going to extend that loan? Some may, some may not. It depends upon the strength of the bank and the willingness to work. I think those are opportunities that are going to be real. And I think no one's talking about this. There is such a huge transfer of wealth that's going to happen in the next decade with baby boomers. Every day, 11,000 people are turning 65 years of age, and they have trillions of dollars of businesses and real estate holdings. They have to sell. I mean, the last two deals we bought were from sellers who were old and didn't want their assets anymore. They have to sell. Hopefully, they're lucky and they sell in an upmarket. You can buy real estate in any part of the cycle. You can't sell real estate in any part of the cycle. So just be aware of that. And if you're a person who's 82 years old and just wants to cash out and you're in a down cycle, well, you're going to have to sell in a down cycle. So there's the opportunity. So I think there's going to be such a huge transfer of wealth in the next decade from that. I think there's going to be a lot of assets coming on the market and selling.
Yeah, very good point. And we definitely will see that. You know, the other thing I wanted to just add to that is the fact that if you bought an asset, let's say, and you had a 3% interest rate, you know, you have a certain cash flow. That cash flow equates to the value of that property, right?
Yes.
If that rate now is at 8%, maybe you got to refinance out of it because it's matured, whatever the case is.
Yes.
If the rate now is 7%, 8%, that value has now come down because your rents haven't kept up to pace with that. And
yes.
So we have depression in value. Now, all of a sudden, you have a discount that you're able to buy that property at. And now think about it, if you're buying it with the rate a little bit higher, well, people are panicking. Imagine when the rates come back down.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Then that value shoots back up again. So, yeah, exactly. It's a huge opportunity to really get busy now that rates have gone up, as opposed to getting scared and not doing anything.
And it's amazing, Joel. I'll make one more point. The psychology of people, they all want to get in when going's good. Asset prices are going up and the emotions are there and people feel great. Now that things have slowed down and people know, they know there's a recession. If no, we're not in one, they know things don't feel right. There's a little scarcity mindset going on. People are afraid right now. If you've got a deal that's not working, you can't go back to your investors and raise them the next deal. So there's not as many calls to offer. There's not as much demand as there was a couple of years ago. And I think it's just going to continue to perpetuate through the cycle. So I think at one point, people are going to be like, you know what? I'm on the sidelines. And for people like Joel and Gino who have investors and who have capital to invest, it's going to be the opportune time in the next, you know, 12 to 24 months to actually jump in the market and buy some deals.
Yeah. I think it's a great time to do that from that standpoint. I did want to mention one other thing because we're kind of getting close to our time here. I think we got about 12 minutes left. But take us back a little bit through what you and Jake and Gino actually are doing these days. I know you mentioned about becoming a life coach. You mentioned about your partnership and other things that have been going on. Tell us a little about, you know, what you do outside of just real estate and obviously taking care of your beautiful family.
When I moved to Florida in 2017, I was basically unemployed. I left the restaurant and the portfolio's up in Tennessee. And I'm like, Jake, I don't have a job and I don't want to retire. I mean, I love my wife dearly. I love the kids, but I can't be home all the time. And we just wrote a book and we're doing a podcast. I'm like, why don't we start an education company? I mean, I love helping people. I love the servant mindset. I love creating impact for others. And oh, by the way, when you start a podcast and when you write books and you talk to people, you become a much better investor. So I said, we can become better investors while we're learning and creating an educational platform. And that's what we did. And it was really focused around our three-step framework, our pillars, buy right, manage right, and finance right. And you know, most educators out there love to buy these assets and most love to finance them. But what we call the wheel of the wheelbarrow, because the two legs in the back are buy and finance, is the manage right. It's the one that's in constant motion. And nobody talks about that, or very few people do, because that's a challenging part of the business. It's you're managing the properties. And that's why we say a multifamily entrepreneur, because we realize that 200 units, when we hit that, we're like, wow, this is not just buying a couple of deals and Jake running around and cutting grass and collecting rents and that kind of stuff. It's a whole new ball game. We have to create some systems here. And that's what the manage right portion was. And that's what we created from the three-step framework. And we're like, you know what? Let's start out. Let's start with the podcast. Let's start doing events. Let's start creating the community. And I think in the last 6 years, I mean, our students have done almost 70,000 units. They've raised over $400 million. And, you know, it's over $5 billion in deal volume. And it's just a testament to the long-term mindset. Multifamily takes a little while to get going. But once, like you said, that full cycle, once you've done one or two full cycles, it's like, well, I figured this thing out. It's not really rocket science. If a pizza guy and a drug rep can do it, anybody can do it. You just need to adopt that mindset of it's a business. I have to tend to it like a child because I can't let it go. I have to, you know, tend the store and just think about buying these assets properly. If you buy them properly on the front end, you can finance them on the front end. It's the manage right that's left to take care of these assets.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do people get in touch with you if they wanted to find out more about Jake and Gino?
Just go to Jake and Gino, the website, jakeandgino.com. We've got our live event coming out October 14th and 15th at the Gaylord Palms. Last year, we had 1,200 investors. This year, we're shooting for around the same amount. It's a great conference, two-day conference. If you're looking to raise capital, if you're looking to network, if you're looking to listen to some great speakers, if you're looking to be in a room with multifamily investors, that's the room you want to be in. I mean, like I said to you before, I didn't tell you this, but my biggest regret early on in the investing journey was I never went to events. I was too busy. I was working every weekend at the restaurant. I couldn't go out and meet all these brokers and meet all of these potential partners. I was just lucky that I met that one at the restaurant. But I would challenge anybody, if you're in the real estate business, you need to be going out to more conferences. You need to be going out to more events. And I think ours, we call it the financial vacation for smart people. It's in Orlando. Bring the family, go to Disney before, come to the two-day conference and have a great time.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. That's good information. And it's admirable that you would learn all this stuff. You know, oftentimes it's the idea of, well, I figured it out, you go figure it out. Right? But you've chosen not to do that. You've chosen to give back and to help other people out and give them the insight and direction to move forward. I guess you feel pretty good about doing that.
Joel, I think our generation is a little different than the previous generation. My dad, he was an amazing guy. He taught me everything in the restaurant, but there were some things that he kept to himself. I still don't know this recipe for his Italian cheesecake. He did not tell me the damn recipe. It died with him. Can you imagine that? Like, why would I want something so amazing to die with me? I wanted to continue to live. And that's what it is. I saw what mentorship did for me. I saw how it changed my life completely, but not only my life. It's impacted my father-in-law who's living here right now, my mother-in-law who's living here right now, my brother, my partner, Jake, all the extension and all the hundreds of students that we've helped. I mean, why would I want to keep that hidden? Why would I want to keep that behind the curtain? There's so much. I was living in a scarcity mindset. And then when I met and started talking to the Garrett Gundersons of the world, started interviewing them, started reading their books, started going to life coaching school. If you live from a scarcity mindset, you're going to hold everything back. My father had a scarcity mindset. We have to stay small. There's competition. I don't want to compete with other people. Let's keep it all together in the family. Whereas opposed to the abundance mindset is there's so many deals out there. There's so much money out there. There is so much opportunity out there. So if I lose a deal to a student, it's okay. I'll get the next deal. You know, that's the mindset that I've been able to shift to. And it really comes down to, I just want to create impact. I want to leave a legacy. I want my kids to be proud of what I'm doing. And I want to create a company that has impact and will be able to create that for others.
Yeah. And you're right. It is a shift in mindset. You know, we both kind of grew up in the same mentality and mindset, but you know, at the end of the day, because it was like, well, if you know all these people, why would you do a podcast and let everybody know who you know? Because they could call them and do this. Dude, there's so much. You couldn't do every deal if you wanted to do it in your own little city.
Yes.
Right? I mean, yes. It's just too much business out there. So to have that mindset is really immature. I mean,
Joel, let me ask you though, you can have your friend come and say, hey, Joel, I heard you on the podcast. I got a deal. Can we partner up? I mean, those opportunities are there, but you don't see that when you have scarcity, because all you want to do is all you. Right. I had a guy who was in construction in New York. He was making $2 million a deal doing paving jobs, but was always complaining about the taxes he had to pay. And I said, why don't you start syndicating deals and go out and find other partners? No, I want to keep everything to myself. Well, guess what? He's still paving deals up there. He's still making money, but he's still complaining about the same problems. If he looked at it a different perspective and shared a piece of the pie, and all of a sudden that part of the pie would have gotten bigger, and this other pie over here that he doesn't really want would have gotten smaller. That's the scarcity mindset that holds you back.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, for me, you know, personally, I would much rather do deals in partnership than try to do everything on my own.
Yes.
You know, I bring a certain skill set. I know the finance side of the game. You know, get somebody who knows the construction side or the asset management side or some other side of the business.
Yes.
Partner up and share the revenue. You can always go and do a whole lot more if you take that mindset. You know, I've always said I would rather have, you know, 10% of $1 billion pie than 100% of $100 pie, right?
So. Yes. Back to the food reference. I like the food reference.
That's right. So you gotta have a different mindset in order to make things happen. So it's really good out here today. So anything you want to leave us with? I think it's been a great show today, a lot of good insight. I know you're a big sports fan. I kind of noticed that in doing a little bit of digging. But anything else you want to leave us with that you think will be of value to our audience today?
Maybe one book. I would tell everyone to read Stephen Covey's book. For some reason, that popped into my mind right now, The Seven Habits. And the Seven Habits are really important. I read them about 15 years ago. I didn't give them much thought, but I read them a couple of years ago. And when you read Stephen Covey, he's such an impactful writer. I mean, he had 9 kids himself and everyone's saying you're too busy. I think if you start working on yourself and working on the relationship with yourself, that's really important. And one other book that I would highly recommend is The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. Understand the relationship you have with money. Don't let it hold you back. That's a lot of us don't understand what our relationship with money was. I was fortunate that I was a saver. But I used to be the saver for the rainy day, not the saver to invest. And once I understood that relationship that I had with money, hey, I'm just saving money. Money's just a result. What does money do for me? Money's really just to get my autonomy and my financial freedom. Once I understood that relationship, it was a lot easier for me to start investing and start taking that risk. So those two books have been pivotal for my formation into becoming a better investor.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it almost picks up on from the richest man in Babylon, you know, where you used to talk about your money was your children. Basically, you wouldn't go out and just kill your children, right?
So,
but you nurture them and you help them to grow and you send them out to produce a return, you know?
Yes.
It's kind of the same thing. You want to grow your kids in a way that when they turn around and later on in life, they can, you know, help produce a return and do well themselves. So, very, very good principles in understanding how money works. So, Gino, hey, man, it's been great. I'm looking forward to certainly getting together with you. And, you know, it's been a fantastic discussion on, you know, how you've done it and how you've been helping other people to do it as well in the commercial real estate space. So we got to get together, man. Maybe I'll come down there to the show and check things out. I would love to.
You let me know. I'll make that happen. And listen, thanks for having me on here. Thanks for allowing me the platform to be able to speak about multifamily, my journey, and just to show everybody that if you want to get into it, the right time is only right when you're ready to do it. Like I said, we started in 2011, not a good time to get into real estate, but I was ready. I mean, for it. So that once again, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
For all you listening, thank you so much for being with us on the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. And thanks to our special guest, Gino Barbaro. And we look forward to catching up with you guys next week as well. Thanks. Have a great afternoon. You've been listening to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Please check back weekly to hear our upcoming guests.